I'm your host, DJ Marcus. Let's see what's happening in the world today. Yes, hello, hello, hello. It is 1900 UTC. That means you're in the right place. We're going to talk about some news and maybe pair some music, and we'll just have a good old time. It is Tuesday. That means, well, doesn't mean a whole lot of much of nothing, because every day we start with
world news.
That's right. We whirl it around in that pot and say, okay, what's happening, universe? First up, got one that freaked me out a little bit, so I wanted to start there. Let me go ahead and pull up calm. That is an important component. Don't ever forget that. Always, when we're doing a live show, which is today, it's Tuesday, October 28th, you want to just go ahead and SSH over to SDF, and then type com, C-O-M, hit enter, press G for go to, and then type Anon Radio in all lowercase, and that will switch you over to the Anon Radio room. And then you'll be all set. You can check it all out, and you'll be hanging out with Ratsu and X1 and I. SMJ is probably around. And, of course, don't forget Jazzmaz, always around, ready to help out, or is in there at least, today. So anyway, let's get going. Let's talk about this world news. First up, from the BBC, the first witness at a Nigerian inquiry into police brutality has described how he was tortured and had teeth extracted by members of the now-disbanded Special Anti-Robbery Squad. Okoye Agu was detained after his boss accused him of stealing from work. This just bothers me so much, it's hard to read. The inquiry in Lagos State was formed in the wake of nationwide protests calling for an end to SARS. It may also look like look into the shooting at protests last week in which right groups say 12 were killed. In his testimony, Mr. Agu said that in 2014 he was beaten, paraded in public as a criminal, suspended upside down, and had two of his teeth pulled out. In addition, his car and mobile phones were sold without his permission by SARS officers. The police have refused to pay him compensation despite a court order, he told the panel, which is being led by a retired judge. Howdy, howdy, X1. Sorry you have bad Wi-Fi. That sucks. I think there's a low bitrate stream you might be able to grab. I don't know the endpoint, though. Maybe. I'm not sure. Sorry. But, oh my gosh. Yeah. Very scary stuff here. He said his family didn't know where he was, and when they arrived at the police station after 47 days of searching for him, his wife and mother were also beaten in front of him. So, Mr. Gu's experiences echoed other accusations leveled against SARS officers who've been said to have been harassed, beaten, and sometimes killed many people. The three other cases scheduled to be heard on Tuesday had to be adjourned as some of the relevant witnesses were not available. So, this is a bit bigger story, but, geez Louise. Yeah, this is, anyway, that was just absolutely terrible. But there are protests going on in Nigeria for the end SARS. They changed it from SARS to SWAT, but it was basically the same guys. It's SARS is their special police force name. It's very funny. It's unfortunate, but yeah, it's the Special Anti-Robbery Squad. So it's not, it's this guy. Special Anti-Robbery Squad. But it also fits, it's unfortunate that it also has that same. That's just, they're an acronym's bad. So, now they use SWAT instead, but it's the same thing, their oppressive police regime. Now, if we look over here at Belarus, we go to Reuters for this one. Opposition urges Belarusians to defy colossal pressure and back strike. The opposition leader appealed to Belarusians on Tuesday to throw their support behind national strike to oust President Alexander Lukashenko. The government insisted that companies were working as normal. On the second day of the strike, she has said will paralyze the country. Tsikhanouskaya said employees at a string of major companies were refusing to work their shifts but coming under colossal pressure from authorities. 11 weeks after running against Lukashenko, she's the one that won, allegedly won, but lost. All right, so no, it's yeah. If I'm talking about the pandemic, I'll say COVID or COVID-19 probably. But yeah, SARS is like is part of the whole family of viruses, just like COVID is. So no stress. Let's keep on rolling. We got some scary stuff going on in France while we're at it. This is coming from France 24. France is increasing security at religious sites, as the interior minister said Tuesday that country faces a very high risk of terrorist threats amid growing geopolitical tensions following the beheading of a teacher. French diplomats are trying to quell anger in Turkey and Arab nations amid anti-France protests and calls for boycotts of French goods in response to President Macron's firm stance against Islamism in the wake of the October 16th beheading. European allies have supported Macron, while Muslim-majority countries are angered by his defense of prophet cartoons they say they consider sacrilegious. Yeah, it's very wild here. So France National Police have called for increased security at religious sites around the All Saints holiday this coming weekend, particularly noting online threats from extremists against Christians and moderate French Muslims. Interior Minister Gerald Darmanin said on France Inter Radio that the terrorist threat remains very high because we have a lot of enemies from within and outside the country. He reiterated plans to try to disband Muslim groups seen as peddling dangerous radical views or with too much foreign financing. He accused Turkey and Pakistan in particular of meddling in France's internal business. So this is it's a pretty wild thing as France kind of reacts. France is an interesting whole society. They have an interesting secular belief system. So check it out. That's why it's kind of news to me. It's kind of interesting to see how France is reacting to this kind of stuff. We go back to Africa with this router story. Six gunmen on motorbikes with AK-47 assault rifles have kidnapped an American man from his home on the edge of a rural village in southern Niger in the early hours of Tuesday, multiple sources said. The kidnappers seized 27-year-old Philip Walton, who kept camels, sheep, and poultry, and grew mango trees near the border with Nigeria. At around 0145 local time, 0045 GMT, a police source, two local officials, and three security sources told Reuters. His wife, young daughter, and his brother were left behind in their homes in the village of Masalta. The U.S. State Department confirmed an American citizen had been abducted in Niger, but gave no further details. Niger, much like much of West Africa's Sahel region, is struggling with a deepening security crisis as groups with links to Al-Qaeda and Islamic State carry out attacks on the army and civilians, despite help from the French and U.S. forces. So I hope they get him back. But it was a bit of a surprise. And let's keep on a rolling here. Eiffel Tower area evacuated briefly after bag filled with ammunition found. So France is on edge, as always, as you know, for the last few days. This was additional heartache. The Paris Champ de Mars park around the Eiffel Tower was evacuated briefly following the discovery of a bag filled with ammunition. A police spokesman said on Tuesday. He added that the evacuation of the park was over now. Earlier, police said the area around the Arc de Triomphe had been evacuated following a bomb threat. Police are continuing their search there. We don't have any more news about that, so who knows? Why was there just a bag of ammunition hanging out in the park? That seems a little suspect. If we go south to Italy, protesters in Italy are clashing with police over measures to stop COVID-19 spread. And there is a video that goes along with it, but the main thrust of the story is thousands of Italian protesters, angry over new restrictions announced to control the spread of coronavirus, clashed with police in cities on Monday as European governments toughened their responses to the contagion. There was a big survey that popped up on my face. Following weekend demonstrations that saw violence in Italy, crowds ranging in size from several hundred to several thousand took to the streets again on Monday evening. In Milan, several trams were vandalized and bins were set on fire, while anti-riot police fired tear gas at groups of young people throwing glass bottles and other projectiles. with similar scenes found in neighboring Turin and in southern Naples. Scenes of unrest came after Italian Prime Minister Giuseppe Conte ordered restaurants and bars to shut from 6 p.m., while theaters, cinemas, and gyms were ordered closed for a month, much to the annoyance of business owners, opposition politicians, and even some scientists. The violence in Italy, which imposed one of the toughest lockdowns in the first wave of infections in March and April, is likely to reverberate around Europe, where governments are weighing the need for tougher measures against the fatigue and frustration felt by many. There's no question that the European region is an epicenter for disease right now, WHO Emergency Chief Michael Ryan said on Monday. So, this is very serious business going on out there. But yeah, that's kind of what's going on in France. Kind of talked about Belarus. We've got one. Yeah, I've got two kind of internationally stories left to give you. The first one is from the AP. Venezuelans are braving COVID wing to bathe and feed sick loved ones. So, leaning against a hospital wall for balance, Elena Suazo wiggled each foot into blue protective pants. Then she slipped her arms into a surgical gown and snapped on white rubber gloves, finally ready to enter the COVID-19 wing. Suazo is not a nurse. She is a cafeteria worker at a kindergarten in Venezuela's capital, but she's also a loving daughter. Her 76-year-old father, sick with the virus, waited inside, and in this ruined country... Wow, ruined country. The only way to ensure that he received the care he needed was to do it herself, regardless of the dangers to her own health. You do everything you can in the name of love, said Suazo, 47. If that person is your blood relative, you don't even hesitate. Yeah, 2200, that's so early. I guess, X1 just mentioned that they have a lockdown at 2200 hours, and it's just very frustrating. I typically, lately, last couple of weeks, I've been going out to get dinner at like 2100 or 2200, so, wow. But basically, the gist of the story here is that family members are going to the hospitals, putting on whatever PPE they have, and then treating their family, basically. So there's people in the hospital, but then families show up and take care of them. So... care is augmented by nearly 2,000 specialists sent by socialist ally Cuba to help battle the pandemic, and by several thousand less skilled Cuban doctors who already were here, but it's not enough. At least 6,000 nurses also abandoned Venezuela, said Ana Rosaria Contreras, president of the Caracas Nurses College, citing a 2018 survey by the organization. Numbers only grown since, she said. So... it's common to see one nurse responsible for up to 60 patients. So it's very, very sad stuff going on there. But you can read more at the AP. And the last piece is from Dissent magazine. And it's basically their viewpoint on a new direction for U.S. foreign policy in Africa. If Democrats win the U.S. election, it's time for progressive reset in relations with Africa. A new foreign policy centered on economic justice and the democratic aspirations of the continent's youth. And I just think that this was it's a long article, but it's just something I wanted to mention because a lot of times I find these articles and I read most of them, but they're just too long to read on the show. But it's definitely something you might want to check out if you're interested in the U.S.'s interaction with Africa. Of course... after the world
news, I want to hear the music.
It's time to play some music. Try and see if we can't kind of chill out or you know, just mellow out, you know? Because we got to talk about... Oh, my neck hurts, sorry. Oh, there we go. Oh, sorry. My neck hurts, so it just took me a second. I'll probably drink some tea, but I've got the toadies here, because, you know, when I said neck, I searched neck, so.
I want to hear the music.
Okay.
I got what I came for. I stopped out hot area in Rome. from the water, yeah. I come from the water. That weren't no easy thing. It's more than nature. It's like my destiny. I stood up on his leg and held my head up high and burned beneath the sun to start a new life. I come from the water. I come from the water. I come from the water. I come from the water, yeah. Life in the desert, just to be together. The sand forever, the same forever. It moves beneath me, it pulls my body. My pulse beats hotter, so far from the water. I long to see the sun, I can't find it when it's done. I pray for shade and rain, I pray to live again. I come from the water, I come from the water. I come from the water, I come from the water.
You're listening to Anon Radio, powered by SDF Public Access Unix System.
Aw, yeah, that's right. That was the Toadies with I Come From the Water off of Rubberneck, that album. It's a good song. It was a fun band. I don't know if they're still around, but that was the album that I had when I was little. And my mom still had the CD, so now I have it on my computer again. Alrighty. Well, you know what? After that international news and that relaxing song, oh, heck yeah. Way to go, SMJ. The Toadies. SMJ's band played with them before. Of course, it is now time.
It is time for tech news.
Play the tech news. We got a couple of quick tech stories for you. First up, the FCC in the U.S. has voted to maintain a 2017 repeal of net neutrality rules. So the FCC voted 3-2 on Tuesday to maintain its 2017 repeal of an Obama-era net neutrality rule, even after a federal court directed a review of some provisions of the repeal. The 2015 net neutrality rules barred internet service providers from blocking or slowing content or offering paid fast lanes. Under President Donald Trump, the 2017 FCC order granted ISPs sweeping powers to recast how Americans use the internet, as long as they disclose changes. A federal appeals court in October 2019 largely upheld the FCC's repeal of the rules, but ordered the agency to consider the repeal's impact on public safety, regulations on attachments to utility poles, and the FCC's ability to provide subsidies for broadband service. The FCC majority opted to leave the order unchanged. The net neutrality repeal was effective in June 2018. ISPs have not changed how users access the internet, but consumer groups fear that they could move to raise prices or slow speeds selectively. It is patently obvious to all but the most devoted members of the net neutrality cult that the case against the net neutrality repeal was a sham, FCC Chairman Ajit Pai said on Tuesday. ISPs and other advocates of the net neutrality repeal say the new rules have boosted investment. Consumer groups and other critics of the dispute, the assertion that loosening net neutrality rules, Consumer groups and other critics dispute the assertion that loosening net neutrality rules led to a new investment. Yeah. Yeah. There's so much. Yeah. The FCC is chickens in the hen house, or rooster foxes in the hen house. So don't. It's hard to trust them right now. And from Reuters again, tech chief executives to defend key law in front of U.S. Senate panel on Wednesday. So the chief executives of Twitter, Facebook, and Google, or Alphabet, will tell U.S. lawmakers at a hearing on Wednesday that a federal law protecting internet companies is crucial to free expression on the internet, according to written testimonies from the companies seen by Reuters. Section 230, a provision of the 1996 Communication Decency Act, shields technology companies from liability for user-generated content and allows them to remove lawful but objectionable posts. It's come under heavy criticism from Donald Trump and both Democrat and Republican lawmakers who have concerns about big tech's content moderation decisions. Twitter's chief executive Jack Dorsey will tell the Senate Commerce Committee on Wednesday that eroding the foundation of Section 230 could collapse how we communicate on the internet, leaving only a small number of giant and well-funded tech companies. Dorsey argued thoughtfulness and restraint when it comes to broad regulatory solutions to address content moderation and issues, and warned that sweeping regulations can further entrench companies that have large market shares. So then we've got kind of basically the same sentiment from the other people there, but that's happening. So it's something to be aware of. Well, of course, I gotta be sure and mention this because I can't believe I forgot. Don't forget, stick around, because I'm at 1900 UTC. The Dubious Goals Committee starts every day at 1930 UTC. I'm only Monday through Friday, but the Tobe is eternal. He is there 7 days a week, and that's only on and on radio, so definitely check that out. We had Harry Larry yesterday afterwards. That was the mix remix. That was super fun. But today... Today it is Tuesday, and so that means, well, after the Dubious Goals Committee, we don't really see anything, but the Resistance is tonight with Bronzy Beat, and that's at 0100 to 100 late tonight, early in the morning, so be there. Impressive beard. I don't know what that is, but right on. So let's keep on going. Oh, I have to talk about another piece of news that I think is important. The sleeping giant. This is from The Guardian. Scientists have found evidence that frozen methane deposits in the Arctic Ocean, known as the sleeping giants of the carbon cycle, have started to be released over a large area of the continental slope off the East Siberian coast, The Guardian can reveal. High levels of the potent greenhouse gas have been detected down to a depth of 350 meters in the Laptev Sea near Russia, prompting concern among researchers that a new climate feedback loop may have been triggered that could accelerate the pace of global heating. I don't know who HL is. If you guys could tell me. High levels of blah. The slope sediments in the Arctic contain a huge quantity of frozen methane and other gases known as hydrates. Methane has a warming effect 80 times. Oh, Harry Larry, yeah. I was like, what are you talking about? The slope said, blah, 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 has affected 80 times stronger than carbon dioxide over 20 years. The U.S. Geological Survey has previously listed Arctic hydrate destabilization as one of four most serious scenarios for abrupt climate change. So, it's a bit scary. Scary news, scary times happening over there. yeah. All right, so let's talk... Let's talk domestic. We've got about 5 minutes or so to go. So first up, the current president of the United States, besides, he's got lots of criminal acts and lots of shenanigans. Of course, he's also an accused rapist, and the BBC has a nice story about that. A U.S. federal judge has dismissed an effort by the Department of Justice to defend Trump in case brought by a woman who accused him of raping her. Columnist E. Jean Carroll accuses Mr. Trump of assaulting her in a Manhattan department store in the 1990s. In a lawsuit, she argues the president defamed her when he denied her claim and said she was totally lying. The DOJ has sought to put itself in the dock as defendant instead of Mr. Trump, citing a law designated to protect federal employees from being sued over actions stemming from the performance of their duties. Oh, we've got some story about some nukes, too. I think it's going to be really interesting. I'll hurry up. Citing a law designed to protect federal employees from being sued over actions stemming from the performance of their duties, the department argued that he was serving in his capacity as president when he denied Ms. Carroll's allegation. But the judge, Lewis Kaplan of the Federal District Court in Manhattan, argued that the U.S. president was not an employee within the meaning of that law, the Tort Claims Act. Mr. Trump's critics say that during his presidency, he has compromised the DOJ, which is meant to operate independently of the White House. The case was filed in New York State Court in November 2019. Mr. Trump was represented by his personal lawyer, Mark Kasowitz. The DOJ has raised this to the federal court level, where the case would pit Ms. Carroll against the U.S. government, not Mr. Trump as a private citizen. Experts say that the move would have brought the lawsuit to an end, as the federal government cannot be sued for defamation. Judge Kaplan's ruling means the original case can go ahead. So, This is so we'll see how this plays out. But yeah. Anyway, I'm just kind of I'm happy for that. So let's talk about this, and then we'll see if we have time for the rest of it. This is great news. I don't think it's going to make very big headlines because the world's burning down right now. But this was covered in Truthout and at The Nation. So thenation.com or truthout.com have stories on this. Nuclear weapons have always been immoral, but now they're illegal. The UN Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons has reached 50 ratifications needed to become international law. Just over 3 years after it opened for signatures, the UN Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons, TPNW, it's like Tango Papa, November Whiskey, reached the 50 national ratifications needed to become international law. The government of Honduras ratified the anti-nuclear agreement on October 24th, which means the TPNW will enter into force 90 days later, January 22, 2021. This milestone was reached on United Nations Day, which marks the 75th anniversary of the UN Charter. The very first resolution of the UN General Assembly called for the elimination of nuclear weapons, making it particularly serendipitous that UN Day would see the ratification of a global agreement that prohibits these weapons. This year is also the 75th anniversary of the horrific atomic bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki by the United States and the beginning of the nuclear arms race. And if we jump over here to Truthout, we can go and get this part. The milestone was achieved after years of global efforts spearheaded by the International Campaign to Abolish Nuclear Weapons, ICAN, which I thought was funny because ICAN is also in charge of the DNS. Different ICAN, though, led to the treaty's adoption by 122 UN member states in 2017. One day after Jamaica and the Republic of Nauru became the 48th and 49th countries to ratify the treaty, Honduras became the 50th on October 24th. After adopting the treaty to indicate initial support, each country must sign and ratify the treaty by affirming that its national laws are consistent with treaty obligations. Currently, the TPNW has been adopted by 122 countries, signed by 84, and ratified by 50. Under the TPNW, informally called the Ban Treaty, state parties may not develop, test, produce, manufacture, acquire, possess, or stockpile nuclear weapons or other nuclear explosive devices. The treaty also prohibits the transfer or control over or threat to use nuclear weapons, as well as the stationing, installation, or deployment of nuclear weapons or other nuclear explosive devices. Republic of Nauru? Nauru? I'll put it in con. But that's all the time we've got. Thanks so much for tuning in.
Well, that
I'll be back tomorrow.
Means that our time's come to an end. Thanks
you can't
for listening.
Hug your kids with nuclear
I'll be
arms.
Back tomorrow, and every weekday, Monday through Friday, before the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe at 1900 UTC. Talk to you then.
Oh, hey, we've got about 10 seconds. Thanks so much for listening. Yeah, enjoy tea. Oh, man. Good tea.
7.